Today on Let That Music Out, we have a very interesting guest. You're actually the first guest from academia and also the first guest that, to my knowledge, isn't already an artist, a singing recording artist. So that's interesting. So welcome to Let That Music Out, Dr. Amara Pope. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. All right, so I'm going to get right into it. Before I even ask where you grew up, I want to start with this one. I'm going to throw you off with this one. Ready?
Hear me.
What did you think about this space when you first walked in?
Oh, to be honest, orange is my color. So once I saw the orange, but also the frames, everything around, you just get the vibe of established. That's the vibe I got.
Thank you. Does it feel like artist friendly or like comfortable for music?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm sitting back, I'm relaxed. It's
okay,
a good,
good
space.
Glad you love it. Okay, so now we're getting to the interview. Cause yeah, we're just starting to have guests here and people will come through, and I just like to know how the place makes people feel.
I'm comfortable,
okay,
you know?
That's good. All right, let's get into it. So where did you grow up?
I was born in Scarborough and I lived there for a couple of years with my parents, my young brother, and it was great. My parents are from Trinidad and Tobago. We were surrounded by a lot of Caribbean immigrants in Scarborough, so I felt very welcomed. I walked into a classroom and everyone was a different ethnicity. It was amazing. But then they moved us to a small town called Elmira, Ontario, and no one really has heard of it.
I feel like I've heard of Elmira.
It's a really small town. We were known as the brown family in the corner house. I was the only brown girl in school. Surrounding us was farmlands. There, it was heavily populated by Mennonites and horse and buggies. Very small town. So I then moved from this multicultural space to a place where we were visibly different, culturally different, and I was made aware of those differences at a very young age. So that inspired a lot of my work, actually, and my interest in identity and representations of identity.
Growing up, you just strike me as a fun-loving person. Growing up, like, what did you do for fun in your neighborhood? Like, what was the thing to do on the weekend?
Well, I grew up in the 90s, so this was before TikTok. This was before Instagram. So old school, we would meet up, go outside, play.
You look super, super, super young. When you just said, like, you know, born in the 90s, I'm actually shocked. I'm like, oh, wait a second.
Really?
Wow.
I'll take that.
Absolutely. All right, so what else you guys do? Like, old school stuff?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, my brother and I grew up playing Pokemon the old school way. I painted a lot. I really enjoy art, so sculpture, painting, drawing, that was something I really enjoyed doing. But in a small town, you know, it was your classic small town: hockey, Tim Hortons coffee.
What is your most memorable, like, thing from being a, is there one particular moment in your childhood that was like super standout?
In both a bittersweet way. I remember being in class one day and a girl asked me, I was in about grade 4, and she asked, do you tan a lot or were you born that way? And that was literally and it was an innocent ignorance. She didn't understand that I was of brown skin. She didn't understand that there was diversity outside of that small town we lived in.
Okay.
And that was a very salient moment when I realized, wow, I live in a town where there's underexposure to people who look like me. And again, this is before social media. So mainstream media didn't have a lot of, you know, quote unquote, non-white people. And the radio didn't play the music my parents listened to, soca, reggae, the kind of hits that I was accustomed growing up listening to. So
yeah.
I realized kind of that was the calling I wanted to have and really articulate diversity in media.
Okay, so that's going to lead me into my next question, your educational background.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get there, because this is part of how I met you online.
Yeah.
So please tell me.
Well, I will say I started as an overachiever as a kid. I loved taking on every kind of subject, just putting myself through it. And I think it's the competitive edge I have. I really like to kind of be at the top of my game in school. And I went to high school at Cameron Heights Collegiate Institute. That was an international baccalaureate program. So I did advanced placements starting in high school. Then I went to do my undergraduate degree at the University of Waterloo, and I did a joint honors bachelor's degree in English and professional writing and fine arts. So I was always interested in different forms of communication, but I didn't know where my passion really lay. Was it in the writing? Was it in the art and the painting and in creation of you know, written works or sculpting and kind of multimodal works. Yeah. And so then I did a digital media specialization during that program, and I found that I was really interested in communication in the digital space. And that's when, you know, social media is popping up. We're seeing a lot of online communications heavily prominent in just everyday communication. So that then led me to do a master's degree in communication studies. And in the undergrad, during that digital media specialization, I actually came across Nicki Minaj's music video, Pound the Alarm. And she represented Trinidad in that music video. And that was the first time I saw somebody in mainstream media and in a music video that my friends were familiar with representing Trini roots. Wow. And so to me, that was so memorable. And I created an essay just analyzing her representation of Trinidad in that video. And that led me to then do this master's degree where I was really interested in how artists represent identity. And that was in music videos, in the lyrics that they wrote and sang, as well as social media at the time. And then I came across Drake's kind of performance and peaking at that 2016 time when I was doing my master's. So I started looking at how he represented identity and found he was doing something unique. He was representing different identities in different music videos. Very Canadian in one, but very American in another. Got it. Lower class background in one, higher class status in another. Jewish roots. It was just all over the place. So yeah. I found that he then appealed to a large demographic of different kind of communities, which helped catapult his career. So then I did my PhD in media studies, where I was still interested in Drake, but kind of a wider breadth of how multiple Canadian artists represented identity. And I looked at how Justin Bieber represented Canadianness, Jesse Reyes represented Canadianness, and Drake represented Canadianness, but in different ways. Drake's kind of representing that multicultural Canada, Jesse Reyes more of like a post-colonial Canada, the second generation Canadian Colombian woman, how it's like to be a woman in the industry and a second generation immigrant in Canada. And then Justin Bieber is the more traditional Great White North, looking at his partnerships with Tim Hortons and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So right. I just looked at these different forms of Canadians representing identity. But what I wanted to do is see what these artists were doing differently, what these three artists as contemporary Canadian R&B branded artists were doing different from many generations before them. Now that, you know, the internet hit and they're exploding in the international space. But I found that the historical representation of R&B in Canada was lacking. I went to look at what people before them did, but then found that there wasn't a lot of academic texts about Canadian R&B history. So I had to kind of parse and piece together an episodic history of Canadian R&B before I could look at them what the contemporary artists were doing. Got so it. I stumbled upon that, but then found that that was where my passion really lay, because I found a lot of Canadian Caribbean immigrants were the ones creating that Canadian R&B space back in the day.
Got it.
So I became really passionate about talking about what these Canadian immigrants did to create Canadian R&B music.
Little known Caribbean artists that influenced that genre. Can you name a few names?
Oh, yeah. Crack of Dawn was a huge one, where I discussed them even outselling bands like Earth, Wind & Fire, and yet they lacked recognition in Canada. Yeah, they were outselling them in terms of ticket sales and concert sales, but they didn't get the support here. They had to go to the States to get signed, and they became the first Black Canadian R&B group to get signed in the States.
Wow.
If we jump to the 90s, we can talk about how hip hop and R&B artists were working together in Canada, because they didn't have that support. So they worked together in the periphery to create this Canadian hip hop R&B pop sound.
Right.
And we have artists like Mishy Me, Maestro Fresh West representing the roots. Cardinal Official also, you know, repping his Canadianness, but again, getting support in the States first before then getting the support here in Canada.
And I want to speak to that. So I also noticed from my research, as being an American that's here, that's working in sort of like the development and exporting of helping these artists kind of, you know, grow outside of Canada, I noticed that a lot of, since Justin Bieber, that's been a really strong common thread, is that artists go to the States, connect with a great producer company, production company, a label, a management company, and they build it out. And then it becomes like this real partnership between the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. And I was saying to someone earlier, I was like, the talent from here, not only people are talented, but I think it's like the humbleness and the heart of a lot of these artists. And that helps, right? And then when the labels in the States get a chance to amplify that and like put great songs behind those personalities and that sort of like light that these people have, right? I think that's what really helps. It's funny, I was talking
no,
about
no,
that.
It's true. And I mean, in a lot of the research I heavily discuss, even Justin Bieber, Drake, and Jessie Reyes had to sign with the US label before they broke into the Canadian mainstream media, which is
interesting.
Crazy.
Interesting. Yeah. So then all of this became a dissertation. So let's take us to the dissertation now. This is the big, this is so interesting. This is what made me want to sit down and talk to you.
Thank you.
Go into it, please.
Well, the PhD dissertation then looks at kind of the historical creation of R&B music in Canada, and then all the way to the contemporary space. So what I look at, I start even with minstrelsy, and I look at how Black identities were understood in Canada and how they were represented, and how the Black identity became associated with music genres, and how certain music genres became known as Black music, and that is R&B as well. And I follow the path of how R&B was classified as Black music over the years in Canada and in the US, and I argue that Canadian classifications of music tend to copy what the US was doing for a long time, because our music industry was young, it was smaller, not as rich, so we kind of mimicked what you guys were doing. But when the Canadian music industry finally formed and we decided to create, you know, a stardom where we were going to have artists that we invested in and populated and, right, and promoted in the media space, we chose to represent predominantly white rock and folk artists. So R&B artists or anybody associated with quote unquote Black music, so blues, jazz, funk, they were pushed to the periphery of Canadian society. So many of these artists were here. They had the passion, they had the talent, they had the eagerness to want to participate in the space, but they weren't given the support here. So they worked in the periphery of society. And that's when I say our music of Canadian R&B music is a mix of so many genres and styles and cultural identities. So that's what made it, you know, a little bit flavorful. It had this eagerness about it, but as well as had this representation of these different identities working together. So although it was a story of struggle, it was also a story of hope, because we saw then these artists actually break into the industry. Although they had the help of the States, they still finally got the recognition and their support in Canada at the end of the day. But even when we started including R&B or hip hop in our award shows, they'd air those presentations of those awards during commercials. So for a long time, it was there, we had it, but it just didn't get mainstream media recognition.
Right.
And so I look at that history and how Canadian R&B came to fruition and how the internet helped kind of create that underground R&B style that we had here finally come to the surface, because we had all these artists finally getting access to audiences through social media. And that's when I then look at, so I group all the artists kind of before the internet as the first generation of Canadian R&B, which, like I said, spans from minstrelsy all the way to the 90s.
But wow.
I wanted to kind of group that history there to then look at what Justin Bieber, Drake, and Jessie Reyes were doing differently. So I put Drake and Justin Bieber into the second generation of Canadian R&B, and then I put Reyes in the third. And what she does differently is she now has more support, more roots in Canada.
Okay.
To build her career. Yeah.
And since Jessie Reyes, have you noticed any other artists that are like, again, deeply Canadian rooted and then, you know, growing out?
Yeah, well, I say like she is in the generation of a lot of artists who are now getting homegrown support. Mm-hmm. And I think that what she is doing is, well, and what Justin Bieber and Drake did was built on the backs of the
course.
Work of these artists before
them. We all
them.
Do. That's what we're all doing.
And that's what I wanted to argue, that they weren't just like a novelty. You know, Drake didn't just come out of nowhere. Sure, people think, you know, he blew up and it was just kind of this anomaly. But what I do is kind of debunk that. And I show that he got a lot of support of artists before him. Even in Canada, here, he had free studio time from artists who had made it already. You know, he got the networks and the connections and the relationships before he signed. So
nice.
What I try to debunk is this idea that they came out of nowhere. They had so many artists before them and they had the help to do it.
Absolutely. Wow. That's amazing. So what was the most interesting fact you learned along the way of this entire journey of, I understand you interviewed a lot of people. So was this something very interesting out of all of it that was like mind blown, like, oh.
Yeah. Well, actually, I didn't even talk about this, but yeah, I interviewed 35 music professionals and marketing executives.
Right.
And I also looked at what Bieber, Drake, and Reyes were doing during the COVID-19 pandemic, during Black Lives Matter movements, all the way from when they broke into the industry. But you know what? Although I was initially interested in what they did in the contemporary space, I found most of the interesting facts was in the history of Canadian R&B. Mm. And when I say Canadian R&B, like I said, I looked at the US space as well. And I found that a really great interview I stumbled upon was when Sam Phillips, which is Elvis Presley's manager, stated in an interview that he purposely picked Elvis Presley to perform the music produced by black artists because he owned a studio space and he was recording black artists at the time, but he didn't get the financial backing he needed. He faced a lot of racism, didn't get the finances he needed to build his and grow his business. So he purposely picked Elvis Presley, a white artist, to perform black music. And he clearly states here, you know, the appropriation of what these black artists were doing needed the vehicle of a white artist to get that popularity and support behind it. And I found that was so interesting. But what he does argue, he was talking to Ike Turner actually at the time, and he was saying in this interview that what Elvis was doing wasn't appropriating. He was contributing to the space in his unique way. But then Ike Turner said, well, but what he did was also take the space of where a lot of black artists could have been because he was the white identity. So that was a huge tension I teased out throughout my dissertation. You know, Justin Bieber, Drake, Jessie Reyes, all different racial identities, all Canadian and not American, but this music is so deeply rooted in black America.
Wow.
So what I was trying to argue was that yes, it's important that we know that history, the roots of where the music came from, but we shouldn't also continue to allow that to create kind of silos or exclusions of artists and identities into these genres as well. So I think it's this tension of knowing that history and really being aware and educated about it before then allowing to have other artists participate in the space.
That's amazing. I just learned a few things. Okay. That's for sure. Okay, I want to go back a little bit because in my research, I realized that you've done a TED Talk.
Yeah.
Please share something
on
that.
Sure. I happened to write an essay about Drake and that in my master's degree where I was looking at how he represented identity in different music videos. So I wrote that paper in school, didn't really think it was going to go anywhere, but I decided to apply it to conferences and I got to speak about that paper and presented at different academic conferences across Canada. That led me to actually be published in academia as in a journal where I, you know, got to edit that, parse it out a little bit and have an academic publication out there. But what I didn't know was that that academic publication was going to be picked up in Canadian media. So it started with an interview with Toronto Star and it snowballed from there and other press picked it up and then decided to interview me on what he was doing.
Wow.
But then I've never had experience with media before that. So what I decided to do is turn that into my own mini PR project. So as these interviews were rolling in, I decided to do outreach to reach out to other media and continued to snowball from there. 1 year later, when the media had died down, you know, far removed, I'm doing my PhD, kind of forgotten about it. An organizer of TED reached out to me and I didn't answer it because I thought it was a spam email.
Wow.
So I almost missed the opportunity, but he reached out again and said, hey, have you gotten my email? And so I asked him to go on a call with me because I don't know if this is legit. It was legit and push come to shove, that's how it all happened.
Wow.
So that's what I'm trying to, a huge life lesson. You never know what one project could lead to.
It's so true. It's so crazy. And there's a story even about how this radio show came together in this podcast, something like that. You know, someone came to me with an idea about a radio show and I wasn't even thinking about it. And I was like, but you know what? It would actually make a lot of sense for what we're doing and artists and, you know, getting our music, letting that music out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So two more questions for you. Next one is, what do you love most about R&B music?
Oh, that's a good question. So as I mentioned before, I'm not a singer. I don't have any musical talents in my body.
I don't know if I believe
that.
No.
Trust me. If you hear me, I'm tone deaf. I'll fully admit it. It's okay. I wish I was a singer. I can play the tambourine. That's about as much of a beat as I can give.
Love a good tambourine.
But you know, that's about it. And what I found with R&B music is it just has that undeniable oomph to it. You know, it gives you that feeling and it pulls and stirs the emotions in me that I can say no other genre can do. And so it stemmed from my interest in that space that allowed me to then pursue it and actually find out that Caribbean roots were there. I didn't know that when I listened to the contemporary stuff and learning about that, I was like, yeah, it's in my blood. That's why I can move to this stuff. So that's why I love R&B music.
That's a great answer. That's a super, super...
It's an honest answer.
Super good and honest answer. Yeah. Okay, my last question is, well, what can we expect from you next? What are you doing next for the new year? It's a new year, 2024.
And new goals?
What can we expect? expect from Ms. Doctor? Just say, I love that. Dr. Amara Pope, what can we expect next?
Honestly, I am very excited to keep developing my career in public speaking. Okay. That's something I've always been interested in and really enjoy doing. And I can start off talking about my dissertation. That's something, it's fresh. I just finished it, just graduated. And I'm really passionate about uncovering that history of Canadian R&B, looking at the contemporary space with my background in media and marketing. Very interested in what they're doing, but also just on a broader scheme, talking about lifestyle balances, talking about how I was able to do academia and industry at the same time, and just having that drive and that passion every day. That's something I would love to share with the world. So
That just led me to ask you another question. Final question.
Okay.
Since you are not currently an artist, but you are an artist in your own right, because you're great with words, clearly.
Thank you.
But being able to look at so many recording artists, what would you say is a piece of advice that you can give to an up-and-coming recording artist based on your research of all these legends and these successful people? What do you think, something that you can say like, well, hey, young folks, like, if you do this, this is what I saw among all of these people?
That's a great question. I think the biggest piece of advice I could give to young artists is to hone your brand as you're simultaneously doing music. And I think a lot of the time people want to create music just to create music. That's amazing. But if you're trying to build it into a career, you need to know kind of your three main brand values. What is it that you want to represent? What is it that you want to share the world? What's your messaging? So I would argue, come up with three brand values, and that'll help guide you as you go.
Amazing. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Amara Pope, for joining us today on Let That Music Out. Any final things you want to say? Anything you want to, you know, say or promote?
Hit me up if you're interested in having me come in to do a guest lecture or just any kind of advice. You feel free to reach out to me at dramarapope.ca. So that's dramarapope.ca.
Thank you so much for coming in.
No problem.